Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
I think when you're assessing this team, can you go through some of the biggest needs that you're going to address going forward into the offseason?
Yeah, I think the obvious one is the offense, right? You know, I think it's hard to win when you don't score a lot of runs each night. It puts a lot of pressure on the pitching and the defense. And, you know, I think we've shown, you know, glimpses of some offensive, fight at times. But I think overall, just getting the offense to where day in, day out, we're putting up consistent at-bats and, you know, making it tough on the opposing pitcher.
That's Josh Barfield on the White Sox television broadcast. Good morning, everyone. It's Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel, right here on 670 The Score. We'll do the team of the moment coming up a little bit later on in this hour. And we will reopen the phone lines as well later this hour. So be listening and be ready to talk Cubs and or White Sox with your voice and my voice mingling together on The Score's airwaves. Always love when we get the chance to mingle with Steve Stone, who joins us right now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Stoney, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Spieg. How are you?
I am good. What did you make of Josh Barfield and his contribution to the front office plan for everything that is to come for this White Sox team?
Well, I think what has to happen is very simple. You prioritize your needs, and there's a lot of needs going into next season. There's no doubt. We see it every day out on the field. But Josh said that offense was a key. It certainly is. I mean, you score 5 runs a game, all of a sudden those games that you lost, you can turn them around and you win them. But scoring 5 is going to be the key. And the one thing we have seen, just looking at the Mets team, they have a bunch of guys in their lineup that can hit the ball out of the ballpark and frequently do. And so although when you rely strictly on home run hitters, it's going to be an inconsistent offense because there's just going to be some games where the pitcher is not going to allow you to hit it out. But for the most part, we see how quickly this Mets team can score some runs, and that's because they've got bombers in that lineup. That's something that hopefully the Sox will address. That's one of the needs, and that's not the only need, certainly.
So I'm trying to figure out if there's like an overall approach to offense that Josh and others will bring, or is that something that's going to get kind of added from the front office this offseason? Brian Bannister and Ethan Katz working together on pitching, and maybe that next sort of director of hitting, or however they want to call it, is a hire to be coming this offseason.
Well, I don't know exactly how they're going to rearrange the chairs or acquire new chairs as far as this ship is concerned, but there's no doubt the offense is in need, and they're in need of some power hitters. And you can design whatever offense you want to or think you might want that, but then it comes down to the talent of the players that you're choosing to inhabit your lineup, and can they generate the kind of offense? So that's number one, and you're going to sit down and prioritize just exactly how you want to accomplish making this a better ball club. And one of the things is that the pitching is far ahead in the system of the hitting at this point. There's some pretty good pitchers around. We've seen Jonathan Cannon throw the ball pretty well. Looks to me like he's a future starter. Drew Thorpe threw it very well, and he's eventually going to come back from an arm issue. But they've got Noah Schultz in the minor leagues. They've got some guys here. Even Davis Martin has thrown well enough, so you can certainly consider him as one of the contenders next year. So I think the pitching staff is ahead, and they've got to work on a few other things.
Steve, let's back up. Let's zoom out. Hello, hello, hello. How are you? It's 75 games under 500. I can't even process it. How are you mentally, psychologically, going to the ballpark every day? How's it going?
Well, for me, it's fine. For me, I still love this game, and I understand, looking at the ball club, I think we all knew it wasn't going to be a particularly successful season. I don't think anybody could have dreamed it was going to be this kind of a season. And so, when you lose 106 games before September 1st, things are in need of changing, and I think that's what's going to happen. I really like the new additions to the front office that Chris gets brought along, employed from other places, and put together, I think, a strong enough front office to be able to work through this. But it's going to take some time. You're going to take a look around, and there's a couple of things that you have to answer and try to figure out why this is. And it seems like many times the light is turned on to a certain player when he goes someplace else, and you can take a look at the emergence of Michael Kopech as a big factor in the Dodgers' bullpen. For some reason, for whatever reason, he wasn't able to quite do that over an extended period of time here. So I think when you're looking at the trades that were made, look at the contributions of the Sox, and they make those trades to various teams. They traded a lot of major league talent for some minor league talent, consequently the minor league, and there's some people that will rate it as the eighth best minor league organization in the big leagues. That's a far cry from when this team was last. So things are moving along, but I know the fans are really frustrated, and they certainly have a right to be. This has been one of those years that when it's over, you're going to try to forget, but right now we're on a historic pace, and that's not a comfortable situation. But as far as I'm concerned, I still get to come to the park every day. I know people have a hard time maybe relating to the great love of the game that means that it really doesn't matter what the team is doing. We would love to be broadcasting a winning team because it's easier, everybody's happier. It's just a greater endeavor than right now we're sitting back on a daily basis. You know, we've lost the entire homestand heading into today, so this is not a good place to be.
Yeah, but I think you're right that people can't relate to the love of the game and the life of it. But once you're in it and it's just kind of part of what you do, it's a beautiful schedule and like a nice place to work and a nice place to be going to games every day. There's a lot of people who've been in this game for decades and find real peace and purpose and schedule within it. And you're one of them, Steve. Like it's a beautiful thing, right?
Yeah, it's really nice when your job and your passion come together. And when that happens, well, you've got something pretty good going, which is one of the reasons why I don't anticipate retiring anytime soon. I still have a great love of the game, and I'm still pretty healthy. So as long as that continues, I'm going to be around, and I think it's going to continue for a while longer.
Steve, let's get into Michael Kopech that you mentioned. It's been an incredible run with the Dodgers to this point. I saw that the cutter usage is up in terms of percentage and that the spin rate on the cutter is up a little bit. As you said, like when you change atmospheres and go to oftentimes a winning organization, I don't know, like, do you think this is about advice and something specific, or is it about the comfort of a mindset?
Well, I'm pretty sure that he got pretty good advice here. I think Ethan Katz is very good at what he does. The addition of Brian Bannister certainly is going to help the pitching of this organization from top to bottom. So I think that part of it has improved, and I think they tried a number of different things with Michael. But sometimes it takes a while for that light to turn on. I saw some signs toward the end of his run here that he was starting to figure it out, and you could always see that if he got one secondary pitch consistently over the plate, then that would benefit that fastball, which, as we know, is pretty good. So in getting ahead of hitters and throwing the secondary pitch for strikes, I think he's found a comfortable place to be. It didn't hurt to go to an organization that either wins or is right in the race year after year after year, what the Dodgers are. So I think it was a big lift for Michael. He's a really good guy. I wish him well. But unfortunately, he just couldn't, for whatever reason, get the job done here, and the boys in the front office have to figure out exactly what's happened with the players that we have had when they go someplace else and they do particularly well.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know. I haven't been really watching what Eloy is doing in Baltimore as much, but like when you say that in general, who are you thinking about in terms of players who've left and have done okay?
Well, I mean, look, we knew that Dylan Cease was a quality number one or very high two pitcher, and he hasn't disappointed. That's the kind of pitcher he is. So I think he was a very good pitcher here. You come in second to the Cy Young Award a couple of years back, and you realize, you know, this guy's got a lot of skills. So looking at that, the Sox knew that he was going to be a good pitcher wherever he went, and that's how it's turned out. I'm just saying that in general, not specifically, because Michael Kopech is one that jumps out at you. But you sit back and you figure out why it's not happening here. When you do your autopsy on this season and figure out how the Sox got to where they are right now, if you understand that, then you can hopefully not fall into some of the things that have happened that put the Sox where they are this year. And that's for the front office. They're going to sit down and brainstorm. They're going to have a lot of people in the room. They're going to go over a lot of different things, and then you prioritize your needs, and you figure out just exactly which you can fill and how you can fill them, and that will determine who the roster is going to be next season.
So, Steve, I was asked about the Sox, and I had a hard time yesterday kind of zooming out and seeing the upside in a couple years or 3 years. Do you struggle with it, or can you help me with finding the optimism for a big picture, like the next chapter where this team is good and the organization from a baseball perspective feels inspiring?
Well, I think they showed you with their number one draft pick in this last draft exactly the emphasis that this organization is going to have. You know, with the fifth pick in the draft, they took Hagen Smith. They took a left-handed pitcher who looks like he's not going to take too long before he gets to the major leagues. And I think you're seeing an organization that is trying to build it pitching first and then go from there, because right now it appears the pitching is far ahead of the offense. And, you know, I think Josh Barfield said it right. When you score some runs, you can cover up a lot of things. You can cover up some bad base running. You can cover up some bad defense. You can cover up a couple of bad pitches. But if you're scoring 1, 2, 3 runs a game, you're just not going to win much in the major leagues. That's one of the reasons why they want to emphasize the offensive aspect of it. But this team is going to be built on pitching.
Steve Stone with us here on 670 The Score. If you had to put either money or just pride on the line, who's winning this World Series, Steve?
Well, you're looking at, you know, right now you're looking at a lot of teams that pretty much look like they could win, because right now I don't think there's a big outstanding team. We know the Phillies are very good, and the Dodgers, if they ever get their pitching together, they're also pretty good. I'm not sure about the health of a lot of those guys in Atlanta who are injured, but if they start to get a guy or two back, they're going to be tough to deal with. And anybody who gets to the dance, just get to the playoffs, and we've proven year after year at various times that anybody can win. And so, you know, that's really the key. Who is going to win? I couldn't tell you. I mean, if the Yankees get into a short series with you and their pitching staff is entirely healthy to go with those hitters, they're going to be tough to take out. So that's one of the teams that you always look to. And as far as the rest of both leagues are concerned, there's a lot of teams that are fairly equally talented. And it just depends on who's going to get hot. And it doesn't really matter now. It's going forward. Who's going to get hot from now to the end of this year to get into the playoffs? And then how hot will they be when they get in there? And that's going to determine who's going to win it, Speaks. I really don't have a definitive opinion. I think there's a lot of teams that can win, especially this year.
Yeah, no, it's wide open, especially at the top. No team is on pace for 100 wins. We might have no team get to 96 wins or even 97 wins. It's a crazy amount of parity, even among the good teams. And then, of course, right there in the wacky and active middle where the Cubs find themselves, you know, the 4 games back in that National League wild card. It's a weird thing, you know, to be sitting around and hoping that a team or two collapses along the way so you can get back in. Do you think overall the extra wild card has been good or bad for the game, Steve?
I think anything that puts more people in the seats, has more eyes on the television, more ears on the radio, anything that does that is a good thing. And adding one more wild card means there's probably a few teams that will have aspirations for the postseason and a legitimate chance to get there. So you've expanded how many teams are in competition, which means there's more interest in baseball. We all know with football starting pretty soon, colleges have started already. There's a lot of people that would turn their attention toward football. However, this is a really exciting time of the year for baseball. So hopefully the races will stay very close. Hopefully there's a lot of teams that will see meaningful baseball here in September. And unfortunately, on our side of town, that's not possible this year.
Steve, thanks so much, man. Have a great September, and I'll talk to you soon, I hope.
Finish up with a good show, and I hope you're on a few more times before this is over.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. That's
okay,
Steve Stone.
Bye.
See you, buddy. That's Steve Stone joining us right there on 670 The Score. I hope to be on a few more times as well. Kind of him to say so. It's interesting. I'm going to let you behind the curtain. When you talk about just how miserable an organization is, and then you welcome somebody on from that organization and you have a conversation, you wonder if they've been listening, and oftentimes Stoney has, and it can feel just a little bit awkward from my perspective. Just want to let you in. I feel like you, the listeners, and me, Matt, we have a relationship here, and maybe you'll hear some discomfort in my voice every once in a while. And I don't mean the exhaustion that you might be hearing in the voice this time. Here's another pro tip. Can I give you a pro tip?
I'm always up for it.
Okay. If you think there's any chance that your radio partner might leave, you might not want to book an end of August where you have gigs on the 25th, the 29th, the 30th, and the 31st. You might not want to do that with your band if you also think your radio partner might leave. Just want to share all that. But then the Lord invented Labor Day and an opportunity to reset, as we all will tomorrow. And then we hit the ground running this week on the Score Afternoon Show, including a visit with you, the listeners, live from Rally House in Wrigleyville this Thursday from 2 to 6. If you are a fan of me or the Score or the Afternoon Show or the Bears or radio or sports or awesome team gear, then come hang out at Rally House on Thursday in Wrigleyville from 2 to 6. Stop by to enter for the chance to win prizes and shop the best team gear selection in Chicago. Join me, Matt Spiegel, and 670 The Score at Rally House in Wrigleyville, Thursday from 2 to 6 p.m., or you can shop 10 Chicago-area Rally House locations and go online at rallyhouse.com. That's going to be really, really fun. Okay, phone lines are back open for you at 312-644-6767. If you'd like to correct anything, if you'd like to tussle about any opinion, if you'd like to amplify any opinion, feel free on anything that you've heard. 312-644-6767. Talked some Michael Kopech in there. Talked some White Sox, obviously, with Stoney. Talked about the third wild card being overall a benefit for the league, even if it has created some odd situations, some odd motivations, and an awkwardness of the trade deadline, which could be rectified, in my opinion, with some rule tweaks. And then if you want to talk about the Cubs, and I'm just saying, every week we do a team of the moment on this show, and you'll never guess who it is next on 670 The Score.
Mullin Haw, Chicago's number one most listened to sports morning show, 5:30 till 10 a.m.
They aren't playing any tier ones this year, and thank goodness. You don't have to apologize for your schedule ever. Never, ever, ever, ever. The Bears don't have to offer apologies. They should look at this as an invitation to intimidate. The Bears' defense becomes the strength. The offense scores touchdowns instead of field goals. And everybody's laughing because they're 10-7.
Mully and Haw, mornings 5:30 till 10 a.m. on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always live on the free Odyssey app. Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sunday mornings on The Score.
Ground ball to the hole at short, through, base hit. One run is in. Here comes Swanson scoring. The Cubs take the lead. A ground ball under the glove of Isaiah Kiner-Falefa and into left field, and the Cubs remarkably have an 11-10 lead. One of the more incredible victories that you will ever see.
Oh my God, I was like, this is my moment to shine. Even after the first pitch, someone behind me yelled at me, "You stink." I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to stink right here. So I was like, you got to shine right here. You got to put the ball in play and make things happen. And you know, I hit the ball in the hole, and we were able to score two more runs.
It was the team of the moment, offering entertainment. The team of the moment, they caught our eyes.
Yes, it's true. They are the team of the moment. All year we've been doing this, and every week it's been some team. Sometimes it's been Cleveland or Kansas City. I think we did the Padres twice, the Orioles, the Braves, the Phillies. There's always teams out there that were good. We did the Yankees one time, and I wanted to hurl. I know we did the Dodgers. We did the Mets at one point. We've done lots of teams as team of the moment. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, congratulations. The Cubs are the team of the moment. 11-3 since being swept by the Guardians. You win 11-14. That'll work. Eight of their nine series this month, August, ended up being winning series. They just finished the best month of Cubs baseball since May of 2021 at 18-8. They are four games over 500 for the first time since May 23rd. The last 30 days, the Cubs as an offense, number two in OPS, number three in runs scored, number five in stolen base, number three in triples. It's been fun. It's been aggressive. They've been running fast and running hard. And the pitching has been very, very solid all year long. But it's that offense, man. They scored 80 runs in an eight-game stretch, including that absurd comeback win in Pittsburgh over a terrible Pirates bullpen. It's possible, I suppose, but I realized I don't think so. So then the person's like, well, what does that mean? If there's no new ballpark and you're not sure when, I said, well, I think they're going to be the Oakland A's. I think they're going to be a Midwest version of the Oakland A's. And it's just going to stay desolate and empty and mostly really bad until Jerry Reinsdorf passes away and his sons sell the team to a new owner. And then who the hell knows what that person's going to do. But I said, I think it's going to be ugly and bad and empty and depressing up until there's a new ownership. And I realized that could go a long time. Who the hell knows? And it's up to the health of a very wealthy man who is very connected and still passionate, seemingly. And so what are you doing? You're rooting for that guy to get more ill? You're rooting for that guy to die? That's a grim way to live, and nobody's doing that. And if you are, well, I mean, keep it to yourself because it's a human thing. I can't root for that. No way in hell, of course. So what are we doing? You're looking at 5 more years? 10 more years? I don't know. But I don't see it getting better on the field. I don't see it getting better in that ballpark, and it just bummed me the hell out. And maybe it's because yesterday morning I saw a podcast from friend of the show, Rob Bradford, the Baseball Isn't Boring podcast. He sat down with Dennis Eckersley in Oakland, and Eck was talking about the 7 or 8 best years of his life that he spent in Oakland, where his parents came to the game all the time and saw him as the fireman who was dominating Major League Baseball, and that ballpark was thriving and those teams were great. And now Oakland has been a desolate and embarrassing, you know, dystopian Cormac McCarthy version of a ball club going on 15 years. And is that what we're looking at for White Sox future? God, I hope not. But that was my honest answer as to what I thought was going to happen. Do you agree? Do you disagree? What are we looking at here? Woof. Grim stuff, man. Grim, grim stuff. And it just ain't right. It just isn't right. If you're going to tell me that it turns around faster than that or some other scenario, believe me, I'd love to hear about it because I don't like living in this world. I don't like thinking about, you know, was it Viggo Mortensen in The Road? And where the road leads to Guaranteed Rate Field? Woof.
I think that's I saw a different movie.
I think that's the one, right? The Road?
No, you're right. I just didn't remember him going to Guaranteed Rate.
It was Viggo. No, that's where he basically was going. The whole place felt like that. It's grim.
You're right, though, Spiegs. Like, there's not a ton to be excited about. Like, I mean, the highlight of the White Sox season is what, like the campfire milkshake? Like, I mean, it's tough.
And it's not just the season. It's the zoomed out, large-scale future that feels so damn ugly. This is Mark in South Bend on 670 The Score. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Matt. I want to wish you, your son Ruben, and your family rest of a happy summer.
Thank you.
And it's great to chime in with you on the last time. And what you're saying comes to point. I think Reinsdorf dreamed up that whole new ballpark thing to take attention off how bad the Sox were going to be and going forward. The other thing is, the future of the team, and you mentioned, like, would it be like the Oakland A's or the South Side of Chicago? It seems more like the Blackhawks under Dollar Bill Wirtz until he passed and his son Rocky took over. Then he got McDonough and some good people and Val Bowman to rebuild it. And my only hope is if Michael takes it over, he would do something like that, or they would sell it to someone who would do something like that. And that's the only thing. And the last question I have for you is, when are you going to do some hot stove with Len Casper? He's had a rough season. How about getting Peter Gammons and Theo Epstein together for some hot stove coming up here in Chicago?
Oh, man, I love it. Hot Stove Cool Music is a music event that Len and I have been a part of for a long time. Len is a great bass player and a good friend and a good songwriter. I'll tell you this much. November 20th, the Sunday before Thanksgiving, is that? I think it is, but it's Sunday, November 20, we're going to be playing together, our band Sonic 45, in Arlington Heights. Write it down on your calendar. You want to come out and see me and Len? It's a good band. I really enjoy working with him and several other musicians who are dear friends, Doug Jewell and Liam Davis, Gerald Dowd. So that's Sunday night, November 20th. Come check it out. So, yeah, Len could use it. Len could use some good music. Man, the visions of that stadium this week, whew, just horrific, freaky. I think it is the worst state of any organization, perhaps in the history of this town. I mentioned that to Barry Rosner, who was on the air with me and Dan Bernstein the other day, and he brought up what Mark did, the Dollar Bill Wirtz Blackhawks of the 90s, the late 90s and the 2000s. I guess it's a discussion and a comparison that nobody wants to engage in. So we won't, but yeah, it's as bad as anything I've ever seen, that's for sure. This is Ali in Rogers Park on 670 The Score. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. How's it going? Thanks for taking my call. I was telling the other gentleman that, you know, I'm like kind of in between an optimistic and pessimistic Cubs fan because I really honestly feel like I really love the way they're playing in August, and I'm hoping it carries over in September. But deep down, I know that I don't think that this organization is going to spend in free agency what it will take to get to the next level, a deeper run in the playoffs and, possibly a World Series, given what Texas did and given what the Dodgers have done to try to win. I just can't see Tom Ricketts shelling out the cash to do it. And I think Jed Hoyer is the same way. I think Carter Hawkins is also the same way. I mean, like, if you find somebody like that in your farm system and you bring them up and you pay them, great. That's awesome. But I think we have a really good team. But to get to that next level, you're going to need to spend into the luxury tax, to spend a lot into the luxury tax, get a free agent here. And I honestly think Tom Ricketts is stealing a book out of Jerry Reinsdorf's book, trying to, quote what you said last time.
No. That's not fair. There is nuance in talking about it. You got to keep yourself out of the polar opposites or the corners of the ring and making false equivalencies. What the Cubs are showing is a desire to live on the fringe of the big, big boys and the heavy expenditures like the Phillies and the Dodgers and the Rangers and the Yankees. They are, and obviously the Mets and a couple others. So I agree that there seems to be a controlled lack of aggression to go into the absurdities of the tax. But that doesn't mean they're down there in Reinsdorfian territory or anything like that. What it does mean is that they do need a bunch of different people to play well, which has been the case over the last couple of months here. They do need some of their own prospects to come up and produce, and I hope we see Owen Casey today. And they need well-timed expenditures. Look, man, this year, there's a lot of money going off the books. There's a ton of money going off the books. Hendricks's money is going off. There's enough money for a big time expenditure. I know that they will try to do a short window if they're going to sign a big free agent, something like that. But you could see them make a trade for Vlad Guerrero Jr. You could see them make a trade for another player in the final year of a free agent and try to extend them. I don't know that Pete Alonso is not going to get a 10-year, $300 million contract. You want to put Pete Alonso at first and trade Michael Bush for something? You want to put Pete Alonso at first, trade Nico Horner and move Michael Bush to second? Sacrifice a little bit of defense in order to get your best folks out there? Or keep Nico and just kind of platoon Bush and use him a lot at DH and stuff like that? You're not paying him much. I mean, there's an opportunity to be creative and to get yourself a very good player and very good producer. I understand the frustration at the big, big money superstar, but they clearly don't want to be where some of those organizations end up in terms of draining money without a giant TV deal because they missed the boat on that and without other things. And it is frustrating to be at that fringe, I know, and I understand. But understand, though, too, this is a top 10 payroll, and it's going to stay a top 10 payroll, and they will go into the tax. And there's nuance to it, to what happens. But you'll have time in the offseason to freak out about it. Pay attention to the season and enjoy being just four games back. Enjoy being four games over 500 for the first time since May. We'll take a break, come back, and take your phone calls on both Cubs and Sox right here on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Well, I think we've given ourselves a chance to play games in September that count and that mean something. And it took a really good month, and it's going to take another great month. But I'm proud of the guys for putting together a great stretch of baseball and giving ourselves a chance here.
Oh, yeah. Can you feel it, people? The sweet table is now open in the back of the room. Enjoy the wedding, everyone. Craig Tember. Here you go. The Cubs have the easiest schedule of any of the National League wildcard contenders coming up in the month of September. We will go through all of that, including what the Braves and the Padres and the D-backs have. We'll do that next hour. But I promised phone calls. I asked for them. Let's talk to them. This is Mike, who's on the road and is now on Hit and Run with me, Spiegs. What's up, Mike?
Maddie.
Yo.
What hey, up? First time talking to you, man.
Thanks for calling.
Hey, listen, I am a Sox fan through and through. But I found myself at the All-Star break putting a bet down that the Cubs would win the division. Now, I may be off on that, but I thought they were going to make a run. There's no way they can't make a run with the team that they got. That being said, I was with the...
Ah, Mike, we lost you. Sorry, buddy. Let's go to another Mike. This one is in Racine, Wisconsin, and is now on Hit and Run. What do you say, Mike?
Hey, Spades, how you doing?
Great.
Love the show.
Thanks, buddy.
Hey, so do you think with Rossi, when he was manager, if he was still managing, would PCA have gotten the at-bats this year and have been allowed to grow under Rossi?
It's a good question.
Go ahead. Porter Hodge, guys like that.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a fair question. There is a necessity to the efficiency with which the Brewers have operated for the last 8 to 10 years and continue to do so, obviously, with Pat Murphy. But Craig Counsell was steeped in that necessary efficiency, so he became very, very comfortable with it. David Ross, obviously showed a lack of desire to do that with PCA last year and with others. But every once in a while that happens. I mean, there have been moments where Counsell did that this year. Remember Mervis coming up and not getting used at all? There's a couple other guys, right, who came up and did not get used at all. Canario, just like with Ross last year. So for both of them, that happened. With PCA, it was a definite full-on organizational decision to let him be in there for defense and base running. and give him time to see if he could figure anything out offensively. And now that he has, you've got an absolute beast. An absolute beast. So it's a fair question. They have different strengths, but certainly as a full-on partner of the front office, counsel giving PCA all this time has been extremely effective. The run that PCA scored the other night, after he doubled in two runs on Friday, he doubles in two runs, he advances to third on a ground ball to the left side, and then a ground ball to the first baseman, they stupidly throw home, and PCA is sliding in head first home, and he beat that throw by like 4 feet. Unbelievable. Just, he's blindingly fast and an absolute joy to watch on the bases. And oh, by the way, now he's slugging the hell out of the ball. It's crazy. This is Mike in Mendota, who's now on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Matt. Great show. I always try to catch this on Saturday morning. It's great baseball talk.
Thanks, buddy. Even better on Sundays.
Four over 500 for the first time since May. And you just had a little blurb with Council talking about how the team's starting to hit and everything. I just wonder, what do you think about Council's temperament, his even temper, his patience, his clever kind of dry sense of humor, and all of the vision that he has for the run of 162 game season, how he's just stuck to his game plan and how much that's contributed to the Cubs surging. And, you know, they say a manager's worth 5 or 6 wins a year. What do you think about Council's contribution to this run and how they've gotten back over 500?
I think it's a fascinating topic, and manager value always is. This year was looking like a very bad data point for manager value in terms of the Council money and the effect on this team. After with Ross, they were an 83-win team. They did have the September collapse. I think this month will go a long way towards kind of solidifying that conversation based on this one data point. But now that we've gotten to know Council a lot better, I think it's undeniably impressive, obviously. Dude is crazy smart, we know that. But it is that calm that you mentioned, which can be a very powerful thing. And, you know, there's the humor that we talked about. And one other thing has been sticking with me. I don't know about any of you, but I meditate in the mornings, and I am very much a person who looks for a calm, a state of peace with which to perform at my best and stay focused and mindful and present, right? I've always been that person, but I'm getting better at the practice of it. Something came up on our show talking to Council a couple of weeks ago about being in the moment. And it was this beautiful exchange that we had. And he said, the fun is in the moment. And he tries to make sure the players are in the moment as much as possible, not freaking out in the before and the after. And then I asked him, well, how do you stay in the moment? Do you meditate? And he paused and he said, well, breathing is meditation. And I kind of get myself there as I breathe all the time. And if you talk to people who really work on staying in that kind of headspace, just the ability to take some long breaths. And we know that Shota Imanaga has been doing 4-square breathing between innings sometimes in the dugout. We remember the moment of Morel learning to do the big deep breath with Contreras. A Council has that in him in a big, big way. And he does it. He uses breathing as meditation in the dugouts during games. And it works for him. And that kind of peace and calm can very much so have a good effect on a ball club over the course of 162. Difficult to quantify, of course, but I do believe that we're seeing some of that with this Cubs team. This is Ben in Queens on The Score. Hello, Ben.
Hey, Speeds. Just wanted to say the segments with Rosner the other day were absolute gold. I miss that guy. When he found out that Grady Sizemore was the manager of the White Sox, I almost fell out of my chair. I swear to God. And hey, I'm going to let Stan and Bellwood remind everyone that September is baseball season, but if you just wanted to bring back Rosner for like an hour on Sunday mornings, that would be great.
Oh, believe me, I've tried. I've tried, and I will try again, Ben.
Oh, absolutely loved it. Anyway, okay, just a data point on what Council or what the rookies have done. As of now, we still got a whole month left. 4.2 wins above replacement, from the rookies and the offensive side, and 5.5 wins above replacement. That's almost 10 wins above replacement. They're projecting for about 11, 11.5 just from your rookie class. Okay? So let's put it to bed about whether Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins have built a winner. They've built a winner. I'm thinking that today is December 1st, not September 1st. The Cubs are going to be basically in the same spot. If they win out and make the playoffs, they're probably not going to win the World Series. And if they don't, they're probably going to play good baseball and they're going to be showing that they're a winner. They're probably going to lose Cody Bellinger. You know, they need to make a big move. It's Juan Soto, or, you know, you got six dudes in the top 100 in AAA. This is unheard of. With all the rookie production you're already getting, you could go out and make a splash. You could trade for Mike Trout. You could do something big. So anyway, I just wanted to say that. And you know, if this is going to be the last hit and run, I don't know if Tanny's going to do a proper Goodfellas thing for, but Kyle Hendricks needs to be recognized. If we need to have a mutual appreciation society moment for Kyle Hendricks, who in my lifetime now surpassed Lee Smith to be number three on the list. Maddox number one, Fergie number two. Oof. And now Kyle Hendricks. He's earned that spot. And oh my God, when Rosner talked about the Maddox, it broke my heart. I cried again. That was our dude, man.
I know it was, Ben. And the Greg Maddox documentary is terrific and reopened some wounds for people when Maddox left via free agency, a free agency that the Cubs screwed up completely. Good stuff there. Yeah, if this is Kyle Hendricks's swan song, and I think it truly is, the Kyle Hendricks Admiration Society will indeed have a meeting at some point during the month of September. It is the last hit and run, but we hope to get one or two in, maybe a couple more, depending on what the Cubs do during the course of September. Thanks so much for all the wonderful calls. Steve Stone is next on 670 The Score.